This is March 31st, an interview with Lorraine Rothman. The interviewer is Carol Dyer.
Okay, Lorraine, tell me about how you met your husband, when you met him, on the recreation room at the temple.
Well, this was one of the few times I returned to the religious building. Only it wasn't even for a religious reason. I mean, each time it really wasn't for a religious reason. I had been in college like almost 3 years, and very busy studying. I was taking full semester of work, 15 units each semester. I was working full time, and I also made it my business to date every weekend, primarily to keep my father off my back. And so I was very, very busy. And in the spring of 53, my sister, who was more attached to the temple, belonged to a group, a youth group, called 21 Plus Club. And this was for single young people to get together and meet. And I have always avoided running in the same circles as my sister. And my mother, on a Sunday morning, asked me to go over and help the people over there. They were setting up booths for a Purim carnival. And I didn't like the idea. I couldn't take time from studies. But she just, really nagged me to go. So, my blue jeans, my Levi's, and I think I had a gray sweatshirt, no makeup, nothing, which I never wore hardly ever anyway. I went over to see what I could do and to spend as little time as possible and then to leave. And so I walk in the building and there's lots of people all around. And they are building booths and putting up signs and just getting ready for the carnival that was going to take place later in the day. And I walk around and I see this guy sitting on the floor, and he is using black paint on a white piece of paper, large streamer of a paper, and attempting to write out this sign. And I stopped and I looked at it and I said, "What in the hell are you doing?" And it was just a mess. And he says, "What do you mean?" I said, "This really looks terrible. What on earth are you trying to do?" He said, "Well, I'm making a sign." Okay, I could read it. It really looks terrible.
And so,
I had no idea who he was. And I usually don't interact with people that way. But I was not very happy to be over there. So he looked at me and said, "Well, you don't like it?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, here, why don't you do it?" He handed me the brush and he gets up off the floor and he walks away. And I get the brush and, oh my God, what did I get stuck with? At first I was just shocked that he just would turn the thing over to me and walk away like that. And although I certainly didn't have much right to criticize his work. But anyway, so I figured, all right, I'll sit down and do this thing and then I'll just get out. I sat down and I finished up the sign, whatever it was. I'm not sure that mine was any better than his. And then project was done and I just quietly left the building. Later in the afternoon, I get a call from him. I didn't know it was him when he called, but anyway, I get this call from this guy. And he asked me if I wanted to go to the Purim carnival with him late afternoon. And I said, no, I really couldn't. I was still studying, and I had work the next day, I had school the next day, and I just was too busy. And thank you, but no thank you. I'm not interested in it. I don't like carnivals. I don't like Purim. I don't like the temple. I just thanked for all that. So I later found out that he had gone around the recreation room asking who I was. And people referred him to my sister, and who told him that I was her younger sister. And he kept asking how old I was. And she said I was 20, I guess, 21, something like that. And he couldn't believe it. He thought I was like 12. And fine. And that's what prompted him to call me. He later called, I guess within the next few months, he called again. He called shortly after that, a week or two or 3 weeks, something like that, and asked to go out. And I didn't want to go out with him. I just...
You still didn't ask me with the guy?
No. Well, yeah, I did. I knew. But it didn't matter. I just was so busy. My life was just so busy that I just didn't want any more. Didn't want to take on any more. How much can you take on? And so then... So that kind of stopped him. And then at some point he did call, I remember. And my sister had, who was very close to my mother, and always discussed everything with my mother, had told me to stay away from him because he had a very bad reputation. One of the women in the same group, who apparently shared a lot of personal activities with him, and colored his whole demeanor to my sister, who had her own set of values. And she just laid it down the line, stay away from him. He's no good. He's only interested in one thing, and he's going to blah, 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 blah. He's okay. And, of course, my mother was in on this. Yes, you stay away. Okay, fine. Well, so then I didn't have a very good relationship with either my mother or my sister. I kind of took that on as a challenge for, first of all, terrorize my sister and make my sister's life miserable, make my mother's life miserable. I don't know, something on that level. And at the same time, I thought in terms of his maybe being a challenge. So he called back on a Sunday, and he said something about it was a good movie in the neighborhood and wanted to go see it Monday night. He was free Monday night. He was a graduate student at UCLA and asked me if I wanted to go see the movie with him. And I said, I was really interested in seeing the movie, but I had to come back right away. After the movie, we couldn't go anywhere or do anything. I had to come back right away because I had school the next day. I had work the next day. I had to study, but okay. And I also broke a cardinal rule, which was to never accept a date from a guy unless he calls no later than Wednesday for the following Saturday. Okay, so I accepted the date very next night, and my sister was just appalled. Anyway, he picked me up. We went to the movie, enjoyed the movie, came back to the house, and he dropped me off. He made no effort to do anything, either hold my hand, didn't even attempt to give me a goodnight kiss. And I walked in the house, and I was the one who was shocked. First of all, because here I thought I was going to have a real challenge. So my response was, what's the matter with me? This guy has such a terrible reputation, you know. So after that, I decided I didn't want him. And my ego was hurt. I don't know. Waste of time. The heck with it. Okay, so he began to call after that, and I just kept telling him, no, I was busy. And at some point, he stopped. That, the summer of 53, I guess must have been the beginning of June, he called in. He was calling in all the time, talking to my sister anyway about the programming for the group. Mm-hmm. And it was on a weekend, either a Saturday or a Sunday. And he called in, and my sister was in our bedroom, and she picked up the telephone in our bedroom, and she had a girlfriend with her. And she's talking on the telephone to Al. His name was Al. And I'm in the bathroom, in the adjoining bathroom, I'm listening to this conversation going on. I realized who it was, and I decided I would just play some games. And again, breaking my sister's cardinal rule, which is you never have to speak to a guy unless the guy has to speak to you. Right? The guy does the calling. You know. Anyway, I yelled into the bedroom loud enough, I hope, to get over the telephone. Is that Al Rothman? If it is, I want to talk to him. Where has he been? So, let me talk to that guy. I haven't talked to him in such a long time. My sister just, you know, very upset with me. Good. That was my point. And her girlfriend also was just, what a terrible, terrible woman. Okay. So she gets finished talking to Al, hands the phone over to me, and they're both standing there looking at me, and I pick up the phone and I said something to the effect of, "Hi, Al, this is Lorraine. Where have you been? Yeah, I've been sitting around waiting for you to call me. I haven't heard from you all this time. How have you been?" You know, which I thought was just nothing more than a friendly, "How you doing?" Da 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 da. And as it turned out, he took me seriously. I just said, "Oh, I didn't know. I would have called back. Gee, I'm sorry." And I thought, "Oh my God, what did I do? What did I do?" He said, "Well, we can't go out this weekend, but because I'm going away on my, they will reserve it, so I'm going away for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I'm shipping out to San Diego. But I'll be back. We can go out after that." And I thought, reprieve, reprieve. And I said, and here, again, I thought that this would be kind of like the kickoff. And I said, "Well, I want to do that to Dan. Why don't you like me?" And he did. He told me, if not daily, he was every other day, a couple of days, a couple letters a day, some combination like that. And his letters were not the kind that we think about it in terms of how men write women or how people write these letters to people that they don't know, you know, these flowery things. They were personal letters that mostly were just stream of consciousness kind of thing, just pre-thinking. He just wrote about things that he just thought about. It had nothing to do with me. Here I was reading these things.
Yeah.
And he was out stuck on his boat as a naval reservist. He just had a lot of time on his hands, and he just wrote these things that he just was thinking about. And it was through these letters that I got to know him and realized that he was really, you know, pretty decent guy. And so when he came back, he called me, and we went out. And after that, he never called again. He just kept turning up. And he became a very nice companion, very nice companion. He had a lot of things in common. He was in graduate school. I was finishing with my bachelor's.
What was he studying?
He was getting his master's in either microbiology or bacteriology. He got a bachelor's in one or the other, and his master's in one or the other. He was a biologist. So we spent a lot of time together, and he was a very comfortable person to date because he had school commitments also. He never put any kind of role modeling pressure on me. And it's only recently that I have been able to better understand why he never did and why he still doesn't, which is very interesting. I recently learned more about the women in his family. His great-grandmother, his grandmother, his mother, his aunt. His great-grandmother and his grandmother on his mother's side were very independent women who were the mainstay in the family in Europe and in the United States. His grandmother on his mother's side had either three or four men, some who she may or may not have been married to. Her first three kids were of the same father, we think. But it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
She just was a very independent woman who pretty much ran her own life and, thought very seriously about what was going on in the world and worked hard to raise her family and get on in life, but certainly was not the usual role model for what we're taught Western family is supposed to do. So he grew up in a family with women who, by Western culture, did outrageous things. And it was perfectly acceptable to him. I don't know how it was in Europe, but when they finally migrated to the United States as immigrant Jews, it was perfectly acceptable because they were poor immigrants. As we know, immigrant families are poor, and it's very, very common for the mainstay to be the woman. And women are very strong. We're very strong. You know, when we have to, we do. And the men either hang around or they don't hang around. And in his grandmother's case, who knew very well, the men came and went, and it didn't matter. I mean, she life still went on with her and her family. So, I mean, it's kind of nice to know that that's why he's been so supportive and been so accepting. Although, he's still a man in this world, and he still, you know, has his own priorities. He still has pulled his own chauvinistic, male chauvinistic, you know, games, but still it's nice to finally.
So when did you find that out? Recently?
Yeah, recently.
Did he tell you?
I kind of asked him some questions. And his mother lives with us. My mother-in-law lives with us and has been now for a few years. And he began to ask her some questions. And it just kind of all came out. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a grandfather who was, he's very quiet. This was on his mother's side also, a great-grandfather on his mother's side, who just enjoyed reading. He was really close to, had he gotten any kind of professional training, he would have been, you know, just part of a university. And his nose was always in some book, and which is kind of unusual, too, for European Jews, because they weren't educated, or they weren't supposed to be educated. He did not like to do manual labor. This is the issue in the family. He did not like to do manual labor. He said, always expect him to be sitting somewhere in the corner, leave me alone. You do it. Oh, just interesting family patterns.
Well, tell me about your courtship with Aaron when you got married. What the ceremony was like, all that.
Okay. We dated steadily as really friends and companions from the time that he got off the boat in the summer of 53. We married in the summer of 54. And I saw him Friday nights. We went to the movie. And Saturday I worked all day. Sometimes I'd see him Saturday night, usually not. And then Sunday I studied all day. And he made arrangements to be able to get into his office at UCLA, where I was able to study all day uninterrupted, and that was really, really nice. It just made such a difference. Because otherwise, I could never study at home. I always had to go to the library. There was no place in home study. And we did things that didn't cost any money. We went to free concerts. We went hiking. Occasionally, we went away on weekends into the mountains, backpacking, which my parents just, my mother especially, terribly disapproved of. And just, my mother already, through my sister, already had this idea about him. Like, boy, you know, just true to form. So our relationship was based on the fact both of us were working very hard to finish school. And in my case, I was also holding down a full-time job. And just being together and doing fun things together. He was very easy to be with, as he still is. Mm-hmm. Just a very easy kind of guy. Non-judgmental, real unusual in our society today. Okay, so by the spring of 54, his major professor at UCLA had received an offer to go out to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and he asked Al if he wanted to go do his graduate work out there. And Al talked with me about it, and we both decided, yeah, that would be a good thing. Good thing for Al. And I applied to the public school system in Baltimore and letting him know that I was graduating in June and I was interested in teaching. And I got a letter back in 1 month that, yes, there was a position open for me to send my resume, send my schoolwork, send it, just send it all and make sure I get my credential and all. Because in 1954, they were desperate for teachers. You know, so, and I had a background, so that was good. So, a job was there for me, and so now we were faced with making arrangements, preparing to finish up the school year, make sure we graduated, and how are we going to make that move? When was he going to have to leave? And he felt that since he was going to be primarily responsible for the major lab, he had to leave right away. I had a couple classes to finish up. Well, we were sitting in his folks' house on a Sunday, and we told his folks what we were going to do. And his dad.
Well, at this point, you were just planning on both of you back here. You hadn't talked about management.
Didn't come up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't even have a chance to think about it because we were under so much pressure to you know, just to,
yeah,
just to do what we had to do. We knew it would. We knew that it would eventually happen. Yeah. I mean, but it just wasn't a major priority. I mean, we were talking about survival and getting on with our lives together. And his dad, and instead of his dad saying something like, "Well, gee, that's really nice," "Oh God, you two are really gonna," no, his dad said, "Well, I hope you're not considering leaving the state without marrying her." And I mean, I was just stunned. And Al didn't say anything, he was authentically quiet. He's not that kind of a fighter. And which is some kind of disadvantage. And his father just lit into him. And you're getting married before you leave. You're not traveling anywhere with an unmarried man. And I don't recall being asked either by him or anybody else. "Well, you are planning on getting married. Al, you are planning on marrying her, aren't you?" I mean, I was sitting there, you know. "How about me, folks?" And he finally said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." "Well, all right, then that settles it." And that's how that one came out. So, I mean, I was really, I just felt like, you know, really glad. And so then, anyway, we went over to my house, and on the ride over, Al said something about, "Well, I guess that's that." I mean, he never did bring it up. And I said, "Yeah, I guess that's that. You know, God, really." And so then I said, "Well, I guess I'll see what I can do about telling my parents." And I said, "Okay." He said, "Well, anyway, we never talked about it, he and I. Never. He never asked me. I never brought it up on those terms. He just sat that." And it took like another week or so. And I just was afraid to tell my parents, say anything to them. I mean, really.
They know you had a fight.
They didn't know any of that. No, no. Yeah, because I never shared anything about my personal life or my business life or anything like that. They really didn't understand what was going on with me other than what they could see. And what they saw was totally not correct. Well, anyway, so it was during the middle of the week. I saw him on a Monday or a Tuesday in the evening, and he brought over a ring, a diamond ring. And he said, "Look, this is your engagement ring." He says, "I mean, romanticism, forget it. This is your engagement ring. I want to make sure it fits your finger." "Fine, okay." And it was too big. He said, "All right, I'll take it back to the jeweler and we'll get it right." Okay. I thought, "Oh boy, here we got this ring. Now I better tell my parents." I did not pick the ring out. I didn't find out till later, until it was his father who not only picked it out, but his father bought it. Oh, God. Okay. It was a pretty little ring. But, okay. So, my sister was the first one home that evening. I figured I'd better tell somebody right away. And I told her. I just wanted to learn. She comes in the door, and I said, "You know, I really want to tell you something. You know, why don't you have a seat?" And she sits there. And I said, "I just want to let you know that Al and I are getting married. And we're going back to Baltimore in the summer." Her response was, "I knew it. I knew it. I knew this would happen. I warned you about him. No, this is terrible. You're going to ruin your life." I mean, it was awful, awful. And I said, "Look, I just have to tell the family. And you're the first one in the door. And I figured, if anything, my sister, you'd be supportive." But, all right, fine, okay. My parents come home. My mother comes home. My father, I think I told him the same night I told the next day. And in just those terms, "I just want to let you know that Al and I have decided to get married, and I'm going back to Baltimore with him in the summer. And, you know, when I finish the school, he's going to school at Johns Hopkins." And, the roof came off the house. It was just horrible. My father was screaming and yelling. My mother was screaming and yelling. How could I throw my life away? With my father, it was, he's a bum, he's a school bum. A 24-year-old man should be already working and making a living. And here he's in school. He's never worked a day in his life, which isn't true. But my father didn't know that. And what is he going to be? He's doing, you know, stupid though, you're throwing your life away. And my mother's hysterical in tears. And I said, "Look, I just want to let you know what's happened. You know, I figured you needed to know." And then my mother starts in on, "Well, what are your plans? How are you going to get married?" And I said, "Well, what I would prefer is something very quiet so we can just, you know, get it over with. You know, he and I both have to finish, and he needs to leave to go back in the summer to set up his work back there at the lab. And I still have a couple more classes to finish here, and, you know, I'm least concerned about how we're, you know, going to have the ceremony. I would prefer that it just be a quiet ceremony, let's say, in the rabbi's study, and be done with it, with this most immediate family. I just want to give up. And my mother starts in with, no daughter of mine is going to marry unless she's married in the main temple with all friends and relatives. I mean, I can remember her words. And I said, I don't want that. I don't have any time to prepare for it. I really don't like it. I don't have a whole bunch of friends and relatives that I want it. And she just laid it down. That was it. Either that or you're not getting married. No, no. Well, okay, we weren't going to do it against our parents' wishes, you know. Neither one of us had that much either strength or wherewithal. So my mother proceeded to plan this wedding out. She made all the arrangements and even picked out my dress, which I hated the fitting. I hated every bit of it. I mean, it was a three-quarter dress. I wouldn't wear a full gown. It was a three-quarter dress. And it was lace. It was stupid. And it was a waste of money. If you wear the damn thing once, and I just, I mean, talk about lambs to the slaughter. And although I didn't have that consciousness at that time, I had the feeling.
Yeah.
And she picked out thing that sits on top with a veil. And long gloves up past my elbows and white high heels. Shoes, which I couldn't stand wearing. She called my girlfriends, the women I knew, plus my cousins, because I had a lot of female cousins, and my sister, and she set up the bridesmaids.
I
said, six or eight of them. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And Al got his counterpart, cousins, and his brother, and his friends. And the men were in tuxedos, and Al had a white tuxedo. And we were married in the temple, in that same temple that he was in Illinois.
What was the date?
It was June 12th. And actually, my mother said we had to get married on a Sunday. I couldn't get married during the week because we were still going to school. And you don't get married during the week. It's either Saturday or Sunday. And I said we couldn't get married on a Sunday. We needed to get married on a Saturday because we had to leave on a Sunday. Because Al, we had maybe 5 days to be together, and then Al had to ship out again for his commitment. And then he would come back and leave for back east, by the way. I mean, we just couldn't fit it in. And you can't get married on a Saturday in the Jewish religion. So it's a Sabbath. So I said, well, what about Saturday night when the sun goes down? Nobody gets married on a Saturday night when the sun goes down. I'm getting married on a Saturday night when the sun goes down. We have no other way. She was furious with me. She said, all right, when the sun goes down, you'll get married. So she hired a band. It was fully catered. It was a big party afterwards in the recreation room right next to the main temple. It's amazing how many isolated experiences I had that I didn't like, that today I can look back on and I know why I didn't like them. I mean, truly anti-women experiences. The day that we got married, I was terrified, sick, upset with the whole thing. I had relatives who flew in from all over the country. My mother put them up in our house, she put them up in hotels, and I couldn't eat. And I started drinking. There was always wine around the house, and I started drinking. So that by nighttime, I was zonkers. Just zonkers. And I remember we got over to the temple, fully dressed, and we were in the lobby waiting to walk down. And Al was on one side. I was to walk down one, there was two aisles. I was to walk down one aisle with my mother and father on either side of me. Al was to walk down the other aisle with his mother and father on either side of him. And so he and I had a chance to talk. And we're ready, right? Everything stops. Al, my father, my father-in-law, Al's father, are taken out into the rabbi's study. They must have spent a good 20 minutes to a half hour in there, and I'm cooling my heels in the lobby. Al later tells me that they signed this Jewish document where he was literally, my father literally signed me over to Al. It's called a kasiba. I literally signed over. It's called a kasiba. The kasiba also has rules and regulations to it on your behavior and all. But there was documents with it where...
And
I'm cooling my heels in the... Yeah, I'm 22 by then. And I didn't sign anything. I mean, it just was... Okay. I mean, when he told me about it,